Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of Steelers Depot, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 32, and the Steelers fell 27-16 to the New England Patriots yesterday, Dave, in a game that, Dave, I described as a game that it was less than satisfying for a Steeler team that rallied back. But it wasn't unexpected, and it was, I think, a fair result.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to describe it. You know, we certainly got a lot to get to, but, you know, good and bad, probably mostly bad. You know, they were in it in the first half there, obviously, 14-10 at halftime, and then, you know, then it just got away from them, and they couldn't respond, mostly. We'll get into it here. But, yeah, I think that's a fair way to describe it. Look, I don't – anybody in their right mind who thought that they had a great chance of winning this game probably needs to put those glasses down. But they definitely had shots to make plays and make the game even closer than what it ultimately finished being.
Yeah, and I know you pointed this out, and it's you know, look, it's 14-13 Steelers, and then in two ensuing possessions that the Patriots get, they have 75-yard touchdown drives that take five plays, 225, six plays, 330, and that kind of sealed the deal as the Steelers weren't able to move the ball after that. You know, a bunch of things, the red zone on both sides were big issues, and you know, we'll get into all of it. The injury report, Dave, pretty clean. I mean, look. The thing is here, the Steelers had seven inactives, all guys injured. You want the silver lining. Every one of these guys could be back in the next 2 to 3 weeks. These are not season-ending or even 6 weeks from this point in time type of injuries. It wouldn't appear. So you've got those seven guys who were out. You had Eli Rogers, who basically didn't play in this game, never listed on the injury report. That's a little bit quizzical. And then Sammy Coates was barely a factor in this game, so that's nine guys. You got Ladarius Green coming back from the PUP list at some point here. That's 10 guys. And then who knows with Bud Dupree, maybe he gets to start practicing and comes back from the IR. That would be 11 guys. I mean, it could be a very different team. You know, look, injuries are going to continue to happen, so I don't want to minimize this, but it could be a very different team if these two teams meet sometime in January in Foxborough in the playoffs.
Yeah, and they're definitely going to have to play better than that bunch did on Sunday as well, too. And I think the most curious guy that you named there was probably Eli Rogers. I mean, one would think, speculate, and I don't know for sure about this. Maybe you can talk to Charlie Batch or one of those other guys. You know, as you mentioned, he was not listed on the injury report. Did he do something to that turf toe during warm-ups or something? Was he in uniform completely? I didn't check to see if I spotted him on the sideline.
I can answer those questions for you. He was in uniform the whole game on the sideline, not really standing with the play callers as if he would be called imminently. Didn't always have his helmet in hand. When AB went down, they had him down on the sideline stretching. Looked like either a hamstring or a groin, a trainer working with him to try and get loose. And I was told during the course of the week, you know, and I had written that I, you know, if the Steelers were going to win this game, and I think I said it on the podcast on Friday, something like Eli Rogers, eight catches for 140 yards, they were going to have somebody was going to have an unexpectedly big game. Well, obviously Rogers was 0 for 0, so that wasn't a very good call. But I was told during the week that he wasn't a big part of the practice plans, just like Sean Davis wasn't part of the week's practice activity. So I don't know, you know, and the way they were stretching him led me to believe it wasn't a toe issue. So I really don't have a good answer for you, Dave, other than this is kind of the way they were going in. And it is also the way they played out. So maybe there was an injury that we didn't know much about because they already had seven guys out and they didn't want to, you know, I don't want to say they were playing games, but there was no point in putting an eighth guy on the injured list and telling the Patriots that this wasn't going to be a guy that you could use. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, but I mean, if he didn't play because of an injury suffered during the week, they could obviously get in trouble for that, for not placing him on the injury report. So
nobody knows the answer to that.
Yeah,
right?
Nobody knows the answer to that. I was surprised that Mike Tomlin wasn't asked that during the post-game press conference. Of course, it was way down the list of topics, I'm sure. But yeah, and then Antonio Brown during the game. In fact, it seemed like it happened with around 5 minutes left in the third quarter. He caught that pass over the middle, and it was tackled quickly by the Patriots cornerback. And then he got up, went back to the huddle, and then broke the huddle and looked like he was trying to flex his leg, lining up wide there, stayed in for that play, and then comes hobbling, which was, I believe, a running play. And then it doesn't look like anything happened to Antonio on the edge on that run up the middle. And then he comes hobbling to the sideline, and then, of course, we know that he went to the locker room momentarily, tried to get loose on the sideline, came back into the game, played a little sporadically, and then, of course, after the game, Mike Tomlin labeled it a quad injury, and Brown was quoted after the game as saying he doesn't foresee it being a problem, that he'll use the bye week to get whatever it is in his quad healthy there. So when you look at who the steer, Marcus Wheaton, obviously inactive for this game, Sammy Coates, finger evidently banged up or something to that early on in that game, wasn't even 100% heading into the game, didn't play but about 7 snaps. So then your receivers for most of the game are Antonio Brown, Darius Heyward-Bey, and Kobe Hamilton.
Kobe Hamilton, yeah.
And if you would have bet me that would have been the case at the start of the season, that Landry Jones would have been starting that game against the Patriots. In addition to that, I tell you, the score at the end of the game is going to be a lot worse than 27-16. So make of that what you will. But, look, Kobe Hamilton, I thought he stepped up. I think Kobe Hamilton's represented himself fairly well over these last couple weeks. And I'll tell you,
Ryan, I would say both those guys. I think Darius Heyward-Bey has as well. I mean, I think they finished for 6 for 68 yards and a touchdown between them. Kobe Hamilton's the big receiver the Steelers have lacked. I mean, he's bigger than Sammy Coates in terms of height. He may have found himself a place on the roster. I don't know, and I think Rodgers and Wheaton are good players. Obviously, we don't expect Wheaton to be back next year, but it's going to be some interesting decisions to be made. And Mike said after the game, he talked about battle catches, going in and making catches. Well, Kobe Hamilton's catches were tough catches. He had the one for the first down where he slid down and got it. And then his next two, they were contested. So, I'm with you. I thought he did a nice job.
Yeah, and where I was going to go with that thought was, boy, all those injuries the Arizona Cardinals have right now at the wide receiver position, you think if Kobe Hamilton was waived right now, he'd end up on an NFL roster?
Yes.
I think he would as well, too. And, Darius Heyward-Bey, great touchdown catch in the end zone. Now, he did have the ball that went in his hands and it was knocked out of it. Call that what you will. Call it a drop. Call it a nice defensive play. But those are the type of things that you need your players to hold on to the football in those situations. Kobe Hamilton, by the way, too, one of the three passes that went his way that were incomplete, I think you could easily or should have probably called pass interference. I mean, if you're going to call pass interference, offensive pass interference, on Darius Heyward-Bey on that deep ball down the left side, which, by the way, probably was a little bit underthrown if Landry Jones would have put that thing out there. I don't, does Darius Heyward-Bey end up getting, having to let up and getting the offensive pass interference called against him? But, I thought if you're going to call that on Darius Heyward-Bey on that one side, then if you go back and you look at the play on the other side to Kobe Hamilton, of course, the referee on that side might have been shielded or probably was shielded. He had his arm bar on that, was trying to catch that deep ball with one hand. So, I mean, how big a play would have that have been if Kobe Hamilton would have caught that deep pass on that play,
Yeah, he definitely had his left hand grabbed. I mean, there's no question about it. And, we hand fighting if you initiate or don't, who initiated the contact and how's that work. It was a close call for sure. I agree with you. But the rest of the news, Dave, in terms of the injury report was good. Mike didn't label anybody else on it. And so knock on wood, you know, as I say, you've got 8, 9, 10 guys potentially over the next couple of weeks coming back, nobody to add. So generally a positive. Our listeners know that I've gotten some great tweets this past week or two about the low mortgage rates out there, and the comments have been the only thing lower than the Steelers' mortgage rate or the current mortgage rates are the Steelers' sack rates or things along those lines. But yes, they are currently near at all-time lows, as are the sack rates. And if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love to support or help out any podcast, Terrible Podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or just make it easy on yourself and go to blackandgoldlending.com. It's a company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave, let's get into this, and let's start with Landry Jones, because I think a lot of people, certainly a lot of Steeler fans and definitely people who don't follow the Steelers closely, felt like Landry Jones was going to be the key to this game for the Steelers having any chance. And I think you and I felt like the bigger key was going to be the defense. And I'll say, you know, I don't want to say Landry Jones played great. I might not even say Landry Jones played well, but Landry Jones certainly didn't play badly. He made a bad throw early in the game that was very costly then. We knew it then, and we know it in hindsight. But, you know, I thought he acquitted himself reasonably well, too.
Well, I would label it this way, and I've gone back through, and I plan on breaking down all of his incomplete throws this week here on top of everything else that we're doing on the site. But he played good, but he didn't play good enough to win. And we went into this game knowing, or thinking, not knowing, but thinking that if the Steelers were going to win this game, it was going to be, with the offense potentially scoring probably at most 23 points, more likely, you know, 20 to 22 points right around there. They would have needed to keep the Patriots, you know, probably 20 points or under in order to win this game. Boy, I did extensive research looking back at the 51 games that Tom Brady has lost as a starter during the career, and you know that's what the numbers say. He didn't have to put up big passing numbers. You know, you go into it thinking, boy, if he can throw for 250 or so yards, if he can complete, you know, around 60% of his passes and not turn the football over and not take a lot of sacks, then assuming the defense played well, then they would have a shot to play. Now, he accomplished a lot of that. 29 of 47. What's that percentage rate math on a Monday, Dave?
Well, it's, you know, what is it, about 65%, I guess?
Let's see. 29 divided by 47, you know, 60, almost 62%. If you would have told me going into the game, you guarantee me that Landry Jones throws for 281 yards, 62% completion percentage, threw one touchdown and one interception and wasn't sacked, I probably would have signed up for that. In fact, I know I would have signed up for that. Would you?
Yeah, I would have signed up for his numbers yesterday, yes.
Okay, now keep in mind that 20-something pass attempts took place in the fourth quarter. What was it? Something like 16 took place, passing attempts took place with 6 minutes or so left in the game. So, you know, he was really having to sling it there at the end. And a lot of incompletions along, during that portion of the game as well, too. What a big turning point that interception was. And there's just no way to describe it other than a poor decision. And as he said...
Well, good decision, right? I mean, you like the one-on-one matchup, right?
Well, I mean, I like it if your man's open, you know.
Well, poor throw, right? I mean, if he throws it out the outside shoulder where only AB can get it, or he throws it to the deep part of the end zone when AB's behind the guy. I mean, I'll take the one-on-one matchup, even if it's a hand fight with AB anytime, that, you know, he'll figure out a way to make the catch.
Well, you have to put that ball where only your guy can catch it, and there wasn't a lot of room, and we'll see what the all 22. I labeled it as a poor decision. David. And Landry even said a stupid throw after the game. So take that.
Was it a crappy throw? Crappy throw.
Was it? Okay, crappy throw. Crappy or stupid?
Yeah, I think it was a bad throw, no doubt. It was a poor throw, no question. But I think anytime you got AB one-on-one, you're going to try and get it to him, even if it's forcing it to him a little bit. But it was a crappy throw. So, I mean, it just looks bad.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, and that came on the heels of a turnover, right? And going into this game, we said, boy, the Steelers need to get, you know, one, probably two turnovers, going to have to sack Brady a couple times. That, of course, didn't happen. But when you get gifts like that, you know, two turnovers from the Patriots in the game like that, and you don't capitalize, that's big. And then of course the Patriots not only took that, you know, not only got that interception, they drove 80 yards down the field for the their first score, and then followed it up with another score. So then you go from, you know, looking like, hey, you know, maybe we can be in this game, to all of a sudden down 14 to nothing. So Landry did. You go back through this game, David, and you can see there were probably two, maybe three other balls that should have been picked or could have been picked. Okay, now almost interceptions, we know what we call those, or they're incomplete passes. So, and you could probably go through every game, you know, a lot of games that Ben done. Ben almost picked, but he wasn't picked. There were probably four or five throws that he probably should have made that were maybe wide or off target. I think he got bailed out maybe on two of those throws on top of it. It was an average performance, if you ask me. It was good. It was not good enough to win.
Okay, so let's go on from there. I think we're pretty much in agreement on that. And you know, when I'm thinking about what happened offensively, look, I think Todd Haley had a sound game plan. I mean, he got Antonio Brown involved early. The very first play of the game, they get him on that 25-yard cross down there. So that was a good play. I will say the 51-yard pass completion to AB might be the best throw I've ever seen Landry Jones make, and you won't see anybody make that throw any better than he did. That's as good as it gets.
Didn't he have that one to, was it during the preseason, the Hayward Bay in the back?
Hayward Bay. That was a preseason throw, so I don't really count.
Okay,
that'll
count. Okay.
So, you know, it was a great throw. And when you see the all 22, I think it'll look even better because it was only a two-man pattern with Le'Veon Bell releasing late and he was open over the middle. But, you know, Landry Jones had to wait a little bit. Had to throw it over a couple guys. Just a superb throw. And I thought he did make some good throws. He did make some bad throws as well. And so the point was, AB got involved in the game. And unfortunately, you know, as you pointed out, with 5 minutes left in the third quarter, his effectiveness is diminished. And he finishes with, I think, by far his best numbers with Landry Jones as the starter. And, you know, he had a pretty good day. And if you figure, you know, an 11-point game, and AB, you know, you'd like to have him out there every play, and he just wasn't quite the same guy at the end of the game. So he got involved. They got Le'Veon Bell 31 touches. There are certainly specific play calls that we can talk about. But I thought the game plan of getting those two involved with the resources that they had, no coach, no Rodgers, and, you know, everybody knows who else, but no D'Angelo Williams. I thought the game plan was okay.
Yeah, they had to use, you know, because of the lack of wide receivers, they had to use a lot of two tight ends in this game. Probably played Xavier Grimble more than they probably really wanted to. So that kind of limits you right there. Grimble, by the way, he's going to be out the door as soon as Ladarius Green gets back. And he's probably going to clear waivers without even an issue. He had that one. You know, we'll have to look at the all 22 on that one that Landry Jones missed him. Did he lead him too far? Was that a bad throw by Jones? Did Grimble kind of let up coming across the middle on that play? And then one other one kind of later in the game had to be one that Mike Tomlin referenced to about a combative catch to Grimble. And then Grimble, of course, had one other drop in that game as well, too. So you need your players to make games. Five targets for Grimble, only two receptions. That's not going to cut it. Jesse James was only targeted twice in the game, and one was a great throw by Landry Jones. When was that, late in the first half? right before the field goal try where Jones hit Jesse James.
Oh yeah, the sideline pattern to Jesse James. That was actually there was one, they ran one play after that. We'll get into all the time management issues there, but yeah, the sideline play was a really good play.
Yeah, and you know, just and they did the right thing getting Bell involved out of the backfield. Look, and I posted at one point during Twitter too. Hey, give me a 5-yard check down to Le'Veon Bell any day of the week. I'll take those all day long on those 5 yards, because eventually they're going to go for more than 5 yards when you have Le'Veon Bell out there. I liked them kind of mixing it up with the power runs. I thought Jesse James could have done a better job blocking on some.
No doubt, he missed a couple, but he whiffed a couple blocks.
Yeah, on a couple of those. What were they? The counter.
The crossbuck counter, whatever. Yeah,
and then I think one on maybe a split zone as well too ran right by a guy, and probably left some yardage on the field as far as the game plan. For the most part, we're going to talk about one here in a little bit.
Right, the game plan was sound.
Yeah, what was sound
on the offensive
side of the ball. You just need to execute a little bit bigger, better, and. Untimely penalties for sure. The holding call on Chris Hubbard, you circle that one in red ink, and I have a
you didn't have a problem with the call, right? I mean, look, it Collins could have been losing his footing.
I understand why it was called. I'll put it to you that way.
Yes, exactly. Because his hands are up on him. He's basically beating him, and so that everything looks the part. Now, would he have lost his footing? Who knows. But I understand why they made the call too.
I understand it. I didn't like it, but I understand it. And you know, say what you will, it's not what lost them the game, obviously. But boy, it sure would have been nice to have that touchdown right there. But
okay, so let's talk about, you know, we've hit the good things, you know, most of the good things, and hit some of the bad things here. But let's talk about the red zone, because I think the red zone numbers are even worse than. What the stats say, because the red zone numbers say 1 for 4, but the Steelers had drives that that stopped at the 28, the 26, and the 36, and they only came away with 6 points in those three drives. So, you know, I realize the red zone's inside the 20, and they had one that I think the missed field goal drive accounted as a red zone drive because they got to the 19 and then they moved backwards from there. But it was not a good red zone performance, Dave. So now let me ask you this from the other side, because, you know, this happened. The Steelers were on the other side of this against Washington, and in week two, against Cincinnati, they were really good in the red zone, even though they gave up a fair number of yards in those games. Do you look at it and say the Patriots' defense was bend don't break and did exactly what they needed to do? Or do you look at it and say the Steelers' offense just doesn't have the playmakers and the capability in that area to be successful? I mean, do you tip your cap to the Patriots, or do you blame the Steelers' offense?
I think it's yes on both sides, because we just talked.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because we just
That's right.
Because we just talked about one key penalty there that obviously cost you a touchdown. You had the interception there that we talked about with Landry Jones. You had And here's the thing: the Patriots appeared to have played a lot of man, underneath with some two deep safeties,
Until late when they went, huge umbrella, eight guys just, protect everything.
Right. Their main thing was not to get beat over the top. They wanted to force Landry Jones to take a lot of the underneath stuff, I think, for the most part. They wanted to try to limit the explosive plays that Antonio Brown had in the game and
Le'Veon Bell.
And Le'Veon Bell. Man. So, they were fine with probably giving Le'Veon Bell those 10 catches for 68 yards, because that's only a 6.8 yard average. They were fine with tackling the catch, so to speak, and
they played the Dick LeBeau defense, right?
better than the Steelers have played it in 5 years. But I tell you, there's one thing about that team, David, and They have some cornerbacks, and I think Belichick even ahead of the game. By the way, did you get a chance to listen to Belichick's press conference on?
I did on Friday.
Man, was that great or what? I mean,
yeah, sure.
You know, and he talked about. I think he talked about how his corners are, or one of the corners, a very physical type player, and all like that. It was either in Friday's or one earlier in the week that he discussed that.
Malcolm Butler,
right? And what a physical player he is, and that. You know, and we had this conversation, four or five, six shows ago, talking about when we usually define Steelers cornerbacks in the past, they've been very physical players, and it seems like the Patriots have those kind of players now. But they also have cornerbacks who can get on an island and cover one-on-one, whereas the Steelers still like to run predominantly a lot of zone stuff. Now, we did see the Steelers play more too deep, but back to your original question.
And they played too deep, and they played a little bit of press. We saw some of that. They didn't play press across the board, but they played across the line of scrimmage. They weren't having both corners up, and so it was a individual specific type of stuff. But they played a little bit of.
Yeah, well, in your cover too, you're going to let your guy, you let your corners trail, and then. Yep. Didn't have the safety stuff up over the top there for you, but
and for the listeners, just sometimes we get into these concepts, and I know not everybody knows every concept. It's cover two is the safety's high. The Steelers play a lot of cover three, which will have the corners off and play back, and so the high safety has the middle of the field, and the two corners have the thirds on the outsides. So cover two, you can have your corners under there, and your bracket guys over the top, and your linebackers filling in. So I know it's a little bit complicated, but that's basically what we're talking about.
Yeah, and a lot of times, as we saw again this week, they'll play a lot of zone up underneath, and
they did that. They mostly did that.
Right, and we saw, and people say, man. Lawrence Timmons sucks, and why do you got him covering Julian Edelman? Look, I mean, a guy comes in your zone, it's your responsibility, but I mean, to expect a guy like Lawrence Timmons to pick up a crossing Julian Edelman, I mean, that's bringing a squirt gun to a to a knife fight,
a hand grenade fight.
Yeah, to pick whatever poor cliche you want out.
And the thing is here. And the Steelers trying to match up Le'Veon Bell, and we talk about it all the time. And the Patriots knew this. I want to just finish up the offense before we get to the defense. But the Patriots got their matchups, and the Steelers had to make the adjustments. But yeah, they know that you can't. For them, it's the same thing. If you're going to cover, White out of the backfield. Look, he had a relatively easy screen pass touchdown. Steelers have had trouble with that. Are you going to cover Gronk and Bennett? How are you going to deal with Hogan, who's didn't do a lot in this game, but he's a good receiver? And then you got to deal with Edelman and or Amendola. So it's difficult, and so this is why I've got some issues with kind of the Steeler personnel thing. But Dave, I want to get to one more thing because I do think that that was good coaching on the Patriots' part, and that's why. Bill Belichick is who he is. I just want to get into the stuff at the end of the first half with the Steelers, how they manage things, because this is a 14-7 game, and a couple things happened with the clock here in this game and some decision-making where I don't think the coaching staff had their best game, needless to say. One is, I don't know who gave Mike the advice on the challenge, but that's about as bad a challenge as you're going to have. I mean, it wasn't close. I don't know if any of the Steeler players at the time were encouraging the bench to challenge that, but he was down for a period of time, rolled over on his back, and then the ball was knocked out. You got to know who the receiver was. First, it was Gronk, who was good at ball protection, and the guy was on his back. I mean, clearly it was a bad challenge. I don't think there's anything more to add to that, is there?
No, not at all. I was as soon as he. I cringe as soon as he threw the challenge flag there because I knew you might as well just throw the timeout in the garbage can right there.
Right, and then obviously this is why this made a difference. Okay, so for basically kind of I wrote this up and you'll see it in my quick thoughts, but the Steelers, there was kind of a four-part thing that happened here at the end of the first half. So they forced the punt, and good on Darius Heyward-Bey for paying attention to the punt that the referee – the official missed spotted at the 6-yard line because the Patriot player ran down there. The ball didn't go out of bounds. He didn't step out of bounds. And he basically knocked the ball into the end zone. It was a really bad play by the guy on the Patriots. He had no need to do that. And he was just kind of screwing around. And so it went in the end zone. So the Steelers got the ball in the 20. And I don't know if Darius Heyward-Bey doesn't put up a stink like that, that necessarily gets reviewed. It was inside 2 minutes, change of possession. So it did. So they get the benefit there. So that was the good part. Now all the bad parts. One is on the first play there. So the setting is minute 47 left. They only have two of the timeouts because they lose one on the challenge. And they're at their own 20. And I turn to the guys next to me and say, first play is going to be a wraparound draw to Le'Veon Bell. And I have – let me make this very clear. I have absolutely no problem with that call. The Patriots, I think, had all their timeouts. You're pinned deep in your own end. You draw a quick complete incompletion there, and there's a – you know, instead of a minute 47, there's a minute 42 left. Then the Patriots are looking to, you know, call timeout. They're, you know, you throw another incompletion. You're behind the chains. Everything's bad in that situation. So I didn't have any problem with the call. It's what they almost always do, and Bell gains 8 yards. Now, here's where I start to have a problem. Now you're ahead of the chains, and you did what you wanted to do. You don't want to necessarily play at warp speed here, but they go as slow as possible, and they don't get the next snap off till 1:05. Now you're down 14-7. The Patriots are getting the ball to start the second half, and now you just used 42 seconds after you gained 8 yards to get the next playoff. And that ends up being a completion over the middle to Lev Bell. And they call timeout there. So they used 18. They got 18 yards to out to the 38, and they used up 52 seconds of a minute 47. So they're down to 55 seconds left, and they're on their own 38. And now they're down to one timeout. Now, much to their credit, they did end up getting a field goal, but they screwed this up, three different ways. I thought that was bad. Then DHB catches the ball for a first down and runs inside instead of running out of bounds, which probably cost them 5 or 7 more seconds. And then a little bit nitpicky, but with 15 seconds left when they get down there on a completion, they had a first down. Landry Jones should have spiked the ball instead of using the third timeout, because once you use the third timeout there on the 25-yard line with 15 seconds left, you have completely limited yourself to sideline and end zone throws. Now, they did make one. And again, that was the Jesse James play we talked about. They did it well, but it was just – you're down 14-7. The Pats are getting the ball. Once you got those 8 yards, I think you got to move more quickly and show some urgency. And the Steelers, they did well to get three, but they didn't give themselves a chance to get seven.
Well, I don't fault when they took that third timeout, because you got to remember DHB, when he failed to run out of bounds and Landry Jones spiked the ball after that, the next was that short pass to Bell, and he got you 22 yards and securely in field goal range at that time. So,
DHB, right. That cost you 5 or 7 seconds in terms of, what he, for 2 yards or 3 yards, whatever he got. It was just, it wasn't a good decision by him. And then the final timeout
was called properly, because there was only 15 seconds left after Le'Veon Bell went 22 yards. So,
right, but my point is, on the final timeout, is he goes 22 yards. You're at the line of scrimmage. I think you can get to the line of scrimmage. Now this is debatable, and I'm happy to debate it, because it got called from the sidelines, and I couldn't tell whether they were up about ready to snap the ball when the timeout was called. I'll have to look at it again, but I thought it would have cost them 1 or 2 seconds to spike the ball. And then it would have given them more of the field. But yeah, certainly we can debate that one. But, I just, the whole 42 seconds to run that second play, are you more worried about the Patriots scoring against you, or are you trying to score points? You're down and they're getting the ball next. I just thought there should have been more urgency after that 8-yard game.
Okay. The only issue, maybe, now we talked about that nice throw after that completion to Le'Veon Bell, you're down to the Patriot 24, so you're perceivably in field goal range at that point.
Yes.
And then you take your timeout with 15 seconds left. I want to try to make sure my next two or three plays, you could probably run, three plays at the max if you definitely two.
Two. They have to be the sideline or the end zone.
Right, and that's where I'm going. I would have liked to have seen two passes go towards the end zone. in those situations. I mean, it's almost like you're obviously you don't want to force the football either, and they're going to be playing man coverage with bracket and yada yada. But you know, knowing that too, on top of it, that even if you know come away with a field, to me the field goal was guaranteed at that point. So and knowing that the Patriots get the ball first in the second half, why not take a couple of shots at the end zone there? But those are just minor qualms right now.
Yeah, let's get to the defensive side of the ball, because I think that's where a lot of the concern was. And Dave, I will say, you know, my initial reaction in this game, and it was a little bit like watching the Penn State game, but not to that extreme, on the night before, is I'm watching that game, and immediately it's clear to me that Penn State's winning both lines. They're winning the offensive and defensive line. We've seen games here, and last week against the Dolphins, against the Jets, to some degree against the Eagles, where the Steelers didn't win either line. And this one, now the Patriots weren't rushing a lot of guys, so it was a little bit easier essentially on the offensive line when only three guys are rushing. But I thought the D-line and the O-line did through the first half and the middle of the third quarter, did a good job. So I thought the defense, you know, after a start where, you know, what happened was the coverage in the first half was reasonably good, but it was good in terms of the zone guys were turning around, doubling guys, and the rush guys of rush of four, while they were able to get pressured, they didn't contain their lanes, and Tom Brady was able to twice scramble for first downs. And that's the veteran quarterback who can't even run being a great veteran quarterback.
Right. I mean, he converted, two or three first downs in that first half with his legs, and, of course, one of them was a quarterback sneak, I think. But, yeah, and I will agree with you to a point. There was some perceived pressure in the first half from the defensive line. However, you know, it all goes from naught when you let the quarterback escape from it and still manage to get the first down, because they moved the during their first two scoring drives, they moved the football, 80 and what was the second drive that they scored on? 80.
They went 80, 84, 75, 75.
Right. I mean, You have Brady that, you know, you flip to have him on the flip field like that, and you're still letting him march down the field. You know, there was perceived pressure, though, more than probably what we have seen. But, I mean, still zero sacks there overall, and that's obviously a key point there. And, you know, Brady was taking that underneath stuff that we talked about earlier, you know, against that zone stuff for 5, 6, 7 yards, blunt.
Right, but I will equate the Edelman stuff was essentially the same as the Le'Veon Bell stuff, right? I mean, you know, nine catches, same type, similar numbers for the two of them. Both defenses were probably willing to give it up if they didn't break the big plays. And the Steelers, you know, what they do, Dave, 5 for 5 in the first third downs, the Pats, and then they were 6 for 8 with two drops on the two they didn't convert. And let me tell you, they were drops with running.
Absolutely. Now, the one drop would have been called back anyway. So
yeah, with the holding.
Holding. But the one Edelman had, that was a big drop. And I think I just got done tweeting right as that play was going, that Edelman was like 6 for 6 or 7 for 7 for Howard, 49, whatever the yardage was at that point there. So that was a big drop by him for sure. I mean, the defense survived. I don't know, what's the best way to label it? I mean, you give up.
Well, I think, you know, at 14-13, mid-third, you know, the Steelers' big opportunity was at the start of the second half when they got a 3-and-out, and then they went and kicked another field goal, and it's 14-13, and you're begging for a stop in the middle of the third quarter. You've now shortened the game. You've done everything you want to do. You haven't been perfect, but, you know, the Patriots, you know, have gone two possessions without scoring, and this is what Mike referenced in the postgame. All of a sudden, LeGarrette Blount goes for 11 and 25. He essentially flips the field. They have two plays that don't gain a lot, and then they get the 36-yard touchdown to Gronk, and that's a five-play, 75-yard drive where, you know, you say, did the defense wear down? Did they get tired? You know, they're gashing holes in the run game. And in the second half, the Pats only ran it 12 times, but they got 77 yards on those 12 carries. That was a killer.
that drive,
just because the crowd was getting
right,
into it.
That drive that you just mentioned there was the killer, because you had just had some momentum drawn with the 14-13 at the time there, and then a couple of big runs by Blunt, and then you know the killer from Brady to Gronkowski there. I mean that. Nothing. That's a hell of an answer by the Patriots right there. And that's the type of stuff that shouldn't happen. And the stuff with Blunt, you know, it's stuff that we're continuing to see. You know, it's them kind of blocking down on that left side, cracking the safety, and then you know, you not having a corner be able to come up there and keep that thing from busting. You know, for more than 10 yards. And you get chunk plays like that, and there's no reason a defense should have been tired, because the offense had just the Steelers' offense on their scoring drive was something like a 6-minute drive. So, you know, they're over there. They should be rested. You know, it's the second defensive series of the second half there. It was a really a demoralizing drive, and you know, at that point. Then on top of it, the way the touchdown happened, I mean, look – you know, you know, it looks like there's several ways to view this, and it'll be interesting to hear people talk about this. You know, you definitely, Gronk after the game said, look, they played a lot of two split safeties all game, and basically on this play all I had to do was kind of angle my you know, shimmy and kind of angle it to the post there to get free. Now if you look at it, you can call it quarter half. Yeah, some might view it as maybe a kind of a cover two with Golden trying to carry as if almost like a Tampa two. I think quarter half is probably the best way to describe it. Did Artie Burns on the outside kind of dive and bite on something that he probably his initial reaction caused Sean Davis to widen himself out even further to prevent, you know, getting beat down that sideline over there? We don't know, but what we do...
Explain quarter half to everybody, because they had safeties up top and Davis is the guy who left the middle of the field.
Right. Quarter half is you divide, you know, you're playing quarter of the field deep on one side, and you're basically playing half of cover two on the other side. It's cover six, and that's what quarter half is cover six in that situation. So you had what looked like who was over on that side? Gay Golden, Golden and Sean Davis, and then Gay and Artie Burns up underneath on that far side of the field over there. And on the other side, you had Cockrell and Mitchell playing the half. Okay, so essentially Mitchell's covering over the top of Cockrell, and then on the other side, you know, it looks like Davis has the deep quarter on the other side with possibly Golden having the deep inside quarter, if you will. So that
asking a lot for Golden to run with him on the deep inside. I feel like Sean Davis probably blew one there.
Well, if he did, it was a result of Artie Burns maybe diving inside, even though Artie Burns recovered on the play. Davis got widened too far on the outside. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Did Davis play another snap after that? He only played.
That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
He only played three snaps in the game, and that was one of them.
He only played three snaps in the game.
That's what the initial snap chart says, David. Now
because I thought he got a lot of snaps in the. Well, I mean, that would have been early third quarter. I thought, in the drive before that he got in for a snap or two. And then, look, maybe they benched him after that. So maybe that was it. So maybe I'm just thinking that I saw him for two snaps on the right before that play. And that was the beginning of the second half. Essentially, the Patriots had gone three and out and then just had the two running plays and then the two more plays before the touchdown. So I'm only talking eight plays, so I knew it was out there. But I wasn't paying close enough attention to know if he got benched. So that would be very interesting if that's all he got.
Well, the thing is, too, I mean, are you know,
Now the Patriots are trying to
run
the football.
Well, did Golden expect help over the top? That's the question, you know. And if he did, it obviously...
How familiar did that look to plays they've run against the Steelers, whether it's Amendola running that seam route or Edelman or, you know, Gronk? I mean, they've run that seam route against them a million times.
That personnel of theirs, man, they can split a cover three down the seam if they need to, or they can split a cover two down the seam if they need to. And that's exactly what happened there. You know, cover two, especially when your safety's widened. And Gronk talks about that play. He doesn't get descriptive in it, you know, in his post-game presser, but he talked about how they played a lot of split safeties and that you know, his job on that route was to kind of carry up the hash marks there and then wait until the safety split even wider and then kind of just bend his route in a little bit is all he has to do because he's past Golden. You would just think that Golden would have been, you know, if Golden wasn't expecting help on the play, that he would have been able to maybe, you know, not let Gronkowski get that many steps on him there. So, you know, part of me, and Alex has a great breakdown of this on the site, and it's understandable why Alex thinks that's quarter, half. Okay, but at the same instance, maybe it was cover two, you know.
And then it's 100% his
fault.
Well,
if it's cover two, then he's expecting help over top. Then it's on Davis.
No, 100% Sean Davis.
Right. So, you know, this is a little things being an armchair, you know, scout, you know, here in your mom's basement. You don't know all the calls, and you have to kind of take what you see and take what you know and then make assumptions based on what happens on the play. But
So let's a couple things. One, who played well defensively? Jarvis was good in the first half. I don't know that I saw him in the second half, but he had a good early start to the game, and everybody on Twitter made note of that. You know, he created the turnover.
I thought Tuitt did some nice things.
Drew a couple of holding calls.
Jarvis drew a couple of holding calls. Tuitt, I thought, did a couple of nice things, but...
There wasn't a lot in terms of individual performances, and you know, this isn't necessarily knocking guys, but there wasn't a lot more than that. I thought.
I mean, they didn't throw it. I mean, Cockrell Island.
Yeah, they didn't throw Cockrell Island again.
They didn't really target him much, right? For the most part, most of their stuff was, you know, kind of what was the thing that I had this morning on my Twitter feed about the times Tom Brady threw over 10 yards. It was like six times, and he completed five of those six. Now that, of course, takes out the one penalty. Here it is. Brady was 5 of 6 on passes thrown more than 8 yards past the line of scrimmage. Only threw six balls more than 8 yards past the line of scrimmage, and he completed five of them. Two of them, of course, were those big ones to Gronk. I think maybe another one went to Gronk in this game. I think one made I'm trying to remember where the other ones were in this game right off the top of my head. I can't. But, I mean, he made the throws when he had to have them, you know, what we would kind of qualify as deep throws. And his only incomplete throw came kind of late in that game on that 3rd and 11 with 7:16 left, where Brady says, what the hell, I'm just going to chunk it up down the right side and see if my guy
wins the battle. Well, you know, he finished whatever his numbers were with a couple drops. And, you know, he finished the day leading the league on the week in QBR, and he was 3rd in passer rating. So, you know, you think like, well, you know, Brady didn't kill you, but he didn't do anything wrong. That's for sure.
Here's the thing about that defense, let alone have I smacked Artie Burns for not being physical enough. The one time he is physical on the outside tackle on a wide receiver, he gets flagged, and that was kind of a bogus call because he had the guy up in the air right when that whistle blows. But, you know, he's got to do a better job of diagnosing and getting off blocks and helping with that edge on those runs where that safety's cracked down low there. And I mean, this is two games in a row now, you know, probably more, that teams are just gashing. Well, they gashed both sides in the Dolphins game, but you know, he's got to do better against the run. That whole the whole defense as a whole has been really just ate up with the run the last couple of weeks here. And when you're not stopping the run, it's hard to defend everything else at that point. But getting back to you know, the defense as a whole, man, you know, I understand the usefulness of zone, and especially zone underneath type coverages, but you know, you're seeing more and more of these teams, David, get these very athletic players that you know, the hybrid safety linebackers that can do a lot of things down low, and you can use them in man and stuff. I mean, you continually go against above average quarterbacks that know what they're looking at, and their personnel knows how to run these routes and get free. You know, these quarterbacks are just going to take what's underneath there, and the whole stop the run, tackle the catch, and don't get beat deep. You know, why did you get rid of Dick LeBeau to keep continually doing pretty much a lot of the same things that you that?
Oh, that's a very fair question. I mean, there's supposed to be some differences, and I guess the difference is they're not blitzing as much, but you know, the results aren't there. I mean, you know, let's be just straightforward about it. When you know, just kind of touching on some more of the defense. In the, you know, the second half, as you mentioned, 77 yards on 12 carries. They've given up an average of 162 yards rushing in the three losses, four runs longer than 20 yards in those games, and they've given up six pass plays of 37 yards or more in the three defeats. Those are, you know, that's not giving up the big play. That is giving up the big play. And, you know, Tua did a couple, you know, LT Walton stopped the pass, but you know, they let Brady out of the pocket. They give up big plays to LeGarrette Blount. They don't cover Gronk all that well. You know, okay, so let me just ask you the one other question. What did you think of the personnel decisions? Well, first of all, I didn't like the idea that Sean Davis wasn't part of the game plan. I think, you know, this is what you got him for. You've played him before. You went to him because you tried to make a halftime adjustment, and then you went away from it. So that, to me, suggests that, you know, maybe they didn't scheme this as well as they should have. What do you think of the usage of Vince Williams and Ryan Shazier?
I didn't understand it, especially if he's healthy. I mean, I want my most athletic player. We talked before this game, David, about how the Patriots and the two tight ends and the personnel that they use, they can look across from you and they can see if you go small. And if they go small, they're going to collapse those tight ends. And how many times do we see them do that with those runs on Blount? They see you go small. Sure, we'll go big up front. And say what you will, Gronk and Martellus Bennett blocked fantastic in that game. It's bad enough that Gronk's going to beat you down the field for a couple of big plays, but he really blocked well, you know, and that's how they beat you. I'd much rather have some athleticism out there, some big athleticism, you know, with a guy like Sean Davis, and maybe play a bit more man. Overall, I just think I think you got to start finding ways to play more man on man and try to take force quarterbacks to stand in that pocket and go through their reads a little bit longer instead of getting the ball out in less than 2.3 seconds, because you're just giving away free yards, and then one busted run or two back-to-back runs, and then all of a sudden they're on your side of the field on you. It just you know, look, people know how much I love Lawrence Timmons, but you know, do you need to continually play him in zone type situations like this, where you know you're not going to at least let him try to run with somebody right from the snap instead of just stand flat footed when somebody comes in a zone on a?
I've been on this horse since camp opened in July, so I feel like I'm beating a dead one.
Today's NFL. Right now, with these players and the athleticism, and it's always been athleticism, but that's why you see these more hybrid guys and run fast, jump far, and be physical. You know, these type, you got that. That's where it comes now, where you got to match these guys up. It should be all about matchups now. We dare you to match up this player on this player. If we're going to get beat, we want to see this player beat our player one-on-one, not just running free, you know, across a zone in the middle. But, you know, that's a conversation for after the season. I mean, are any of us really surprised, David, that the Steelers only have 8 sacks?
No, because we, you know, look, I said 3 weeks ago that the outside linebacker position might be the worst position group in football for this, and it's the Steelers group. And look, you know, people can take umbrage with that, but you know, when we're talking about Jarvis Jones having a great game because he caused a turnover and he hit Brady once and, you know, made five tackles, that's pretty telling stuff. I mean, James Harrison's been relatively invisible the past few weeks. You know, really invisible. Moats and Chicklow, look, I keep saying it, they're just guys. They're good special teams guys. If they're, you know, your fourth and fifth outside linebackers, that's fine. They're getting 35 snaps a game. So it's just not good enough. They need Bud Dupree bad. They need to scheme better. They're going to have to figure it out. And, you know, hopefully Cam Hayward's a big part of it. Just kind of, Dave, just finishing up and putting a bow on things. The special teams, good play by Stevie Johnson. Again, he's going to keep himself on the field. We saw good kick returns. Maybe, you know, we finally saw Justin Gilbert in just his second chance did well. Fitz did well. The Pats tried to pooch it down there, like we've talked about, and the Steelers didn't let him take advantage of that. Jordan Berry was good again. And unfortunately, Chris Boswell, and the elephant in the room we haven't got to as we're almost an hour in, is I don't know how Mike Tomlin kicks that field goal from 54 yards on fourth and three, down 11. And just as a point, I said it beforehand in all capital letters. This is not second guessing. And in fact, I still expected Boswell to make the field goal. I just think it was a horrible decision, and it was an equally horrible decision on third down to go empty set and throw the football. Run the football there with Le'Veon Bell and see what happens, and use it as four down territory. You have to be thinking that could be four down territory, and I'm definitely giving the ball to Le'Veon Bell in third down.
That completion to Jesse James, where he was three yards short of
which was a bad throw, because if he throws it to him on the numbers, he gets the first down. But James had to bend down to make the catch, and that allowed the defender to close ground and not let him get the first down.
Immediately after he was tackled, I said, this should be four down territory right here. That should be the mindset at that point. You've got what, I mean, you can't tell me for 2 weeks in a row you're going to take the ball out of the hands of your best, you know, one of your two best weapons on the field in a safe play call. I fully expected them to run on third, and if they didn't get it, and look, we didn't see any wildcat in that game. Some people had speculated that maybe the Steelers would use a little wildcat. What a great time right then, one of those two plays to run some wildcat. You can't tell me Le'Veon Bell, don't give me the crap about the box being stacked and all like that. You can't tell me Le'Veon Bell can't get 3 yards on two runs. I mean, that should have been the mindset. We're going to strap it up. We're going to knock your ass off this ball right now. We're going to get these yards. We're going to go down and finish this drive. You know, sure, if we're if later on in the drive we're faced with a fourth and seven and we're in chip shot territory, we're going to take the field goal there. When I had no faith that Boswell would make that field goal. For one, the longest field goal at Heinz Field is 52 yards.
Sure. Okay. Sure. And I'm saying I just had blind faith, not that I, you know, really expected.
Right. I absolutely hated that. I hated those two play calls right there. And even if on that third down play, even if Bell had caught that pass to if Bell had caught.
Yeah, when Landry Jones scrambled 15 yards backwards, spun the other way.
He would have caught it 7 yards behind the chains, you know. And there was, you know, you can see a Patriots defender start to come into frame there at the time. I mean, I'm not going to say Le'Veon Bell doesn't get that first down, but probably odds are good he comes up short. Maybe you're facing a fourth and two instead of a fourth and three or something like that. But, yeah, I really did. Because, look, if you go, okay, let's say third and three, you run it and you get 1 yard. Now you're forced with a fourth and two. Let's say you get stuffed. What's the difference between getting stuffed there and giving the ball back where the missed field goal was? I mean, if you're going to turn the football over, I want to go down with my boots on in that part of the game, that part of the field, when a field goal is far, far, far from guaranteed at that point.
We're in total agreement there, and talk about living in your fears. Again, in the first half, they let a lot of clock run off, 40-some seconds, because they're worried about giving the ball back to the Patriots. And here, you know, they're worried about giving the ball. I don't know what they're worried about. I mean, how confident could Mike actually have been that Boswell's going to make it? 50%? 60%?
Yeah.
He's probably not 70%. I mean, how confident are you with two cracks at Le'Veon Bell you're going to make it? pretty damn confident. Boy, same.
Yeah, I don't want to hear living in your fears no more, because he can go from one extreme to the other, can he? He go from, man, why the heck did he? I mean, he's riverboat Ron 1 minute, and he's I don't know who to compare on the other end of the spectrum there. If you're gonna have an MO, brother, have an MO. You know, if you're not gonna live in your fears, don't live in your damn fears. You know, and I guess some could say, well, he wasn't living in his fears when he sent when he sent Boswell out to kick that thing, but. It was a real letdown at that point, and obviously they didn't recover from it.
All right, well, that covers it. Now we'll have a little time off as we get the bye week, and so we'll be able to clean things up. Should we come back? You know, we're not gonna have a press conference Tuesday. Should we do Monday, Thursday this week, or should we stay Monday, Wednesday, Friday? What do you want to? I know you're moving, so what works your schedule best?
I'd like to do Wednesday bright and early, and maybe we can get a special guest as well too, if possible.
All right, we'll see. We'll see if we can. I have somebody in mind, so we'll see if we can line that up, and we'll go.
And
from
here's
there.
Some late kind of injury stuff. Eli Rogers said he was healthy yesterday, just didn't play as a matter of game planning. That's from Jacob Klinger from where is he from? PennLive.com. Roethlisberger in the locker room today, declined to talk. Walking without a limp, for what it's worth. Ladarius Green, according to Chris Mueller of the Beaver County Times, said he's going to have a conversation today with Mike Tomlin on whether or not he'll practice. Bud Dupree said he expects to play again this season. Marcus Gilbert said he is 100% expects to be back for the Ravens game. Wheaton and Hayward both aiming for return then. Did I miss anything else?
No, that's a pretty thorough update of everybody, and that's kind of as we expected. I will say there's no guarantee that the Steelers will bring back Ladarius Green this week, because it's a bye week and it's not as an intensive week of practice. They may not want to burn a week of practice. You know, they may. Yeah, I think Ladarius Green is going to be back, and I think he'll contribute. But they might want to get full weeks of practice in with him before they bring him back. So I'll be interested to see the decision they make. It wouldn't surprise me either way.
Well, like I said all along, the moment he is allowed to start practicing, I would be surprised if he plays in that game that following
right.
week. So with that said,
they might not. My point is, if Ben's not practicing, I'm not sure it's worth bringing him back this week.
And you know, for what it's worth, I will be shocked if he plays. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll be shocked if he plays against the Ravens. If he does, even if he does start practicing, you know, that week prior to that. So I think the return is more looking like the Cowboys. But that is if he starts he starts practicing the week after the bye. So we'll see. We got a lot of time to worry about that.
And remember, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, purchase a vacation home, invest, or even refinance, contact Craig Octane from First Advantage Mortgage. Lifelong Steelers fan and Pittsburgh native, Craig's a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help you out. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763, 855-961-7763, or just go to blackandgoldlending.com and you can apply online. The company is an NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, is Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing.
All right, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. If you have a complaint, want to file it with the complaint department, send it to theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We appreciate everybody for listening. David, until Wednesday, I look forward to it.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.